you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello, 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 or should that be hola, amigos? The dust, though, has settled on Rally Mexico, and this time round, we'll be heading to New Zealand on Spin the Rally Pod. I'm Lise Rose Sullivan, and I must admit, in this edition, you're not going to hear much from me. I won't explain why I'm missing. Fortunately, the team hardly noticed, so let's say no more about it. No Luke today. But we do have former motorsport team boss George Donaldson, who's multitasking from Scotland and shaking the dust from their rally boots, hot off the plane from León and Guanajuato, Dirtfish.com senior staff writer David Evans, and the voice of rally himself, Colin Clark. You two should be heading further south by now, shouldn't you?
Yeah, it would have been great, wouldn't it, if we'd been heading directly from Mexico to Otago. My goodness me, what a doubleheader that would have been. We can't go, but David, obviously the event is happening, and it really is probably the biggest event in the Southern Hemisphere this year, I'd have said.
I'd agree, absolutely, Col. It's a huge thing, and it's, you know, it is really bad news for everybody outside of New Zealand that we can't get there. But all the people in New Zealand now, it's open to them again. That incredible ceremonial start in Dunedin, which you've been to, I haven't been fortunate enough to go to yet. It's open. Share
that with us, Colin. Share that with us, Colin.
Tell us about it.
No, it's just, do you know what? It's one of those great rallies where, you know, the rally takes over the town. The town, Dunedin's not a huge place. There aren't really outside of Auckland and, I suppose, Christchurch. There aren't any enormous cities in New Zealand, and Dunedin is a beautiful, beautiful old city. It's the little
Edinburgh of the South.
Edinburgh of the South, exactly. But it's not so, so big that the rally gets lost in it. And they have this amazing start right in the centre of town. There's a beautiful kind of feature in the centre of town, which is taken over by the rally. And, you know, you it's just absolutely rammed with rally cars, and in particular with Mark II Escorts. That's what struck me. It was my I'd been there for a couple of days before the rally, and I'd had a look around the stages. But obviously, the ceremonial start was the first part of the rally, and it just, you know, I was just taken aback by just how magnificent the centre of town looked, absolutely full of Mark II Escorts and beautiful rally cars. And people, you know, the townsfolk turn up to support the rally, and the atmosphere was incredible. Okay, it was a little bit chilly, it was a little bit wet, but it didn't really matter, you know. That's what the rally was all about. So, yeah, it kicks off with that ceremonial start, which really gets everyone in the mood. Oh dear, George, is that your call from offshore?
That's me. I'll just mute myself somehow. Actually, if I can, I can't think how to do that. Here we go. I'm not sure how you mute one of these calls. There we go.
George is a very busy man, quite clearly. But just a little bit of geography. Dunedin is on the southeast-ish coast of the South Island. So it is sort of directly south down the coast from Christchurch. And it's, well, I haven't been there for the rally. I have been there on holiday a couple of times. And it is just a spectacular place, isn't it, Collie? Go back inland to the Rock and Pillar Ridge, Rock and Pillar Range, sorry, excuse me. And the roads are quite different, though. That it's not, you know, North Island, you have these classically cambered roads. It's different down there, isn't it? They're a bit wider, a bit more Finland-esque.
Well, they are a bit more Finland-like. Yeah, some places they're a little wider, but in other places it's Finland but narrower, and Finland with a little bit more what I would call topography, a little bit more up and down. Okay, we do see that. We see rolling roads in Finland, don't we?
Yeah.
Whereas in the South Island, it is actually quite in places quite hilly, but you get the feeling for the rally as you drive down. You know, if you ever go, and I'd absolutely, okay, it's a very, very long way, but with the world opening up again, people are looking at are treating themselves, aren't they, and doing something a bit special for their next trip overseas. If you're looking at go next year, I couldn't recommend it enough. And I do what I did, fly into Christchurch and drive down that coast road, because it just, you drive down and it gets you in the mood, because you know you're looking at these roads, you're looking at the hills thinking this is absolutely rally country. Mm. And as you say, quite different from what I suppose a lot of our rally friends are used to. You're watching New Zealand and watching the beautiful stages in the North Island. It is quite different, but it's very, very much still New Zealand, and it's still got that New Zealand atmosphere, that New Zealand feeling, and that New Zealand passion for rallying, because it's, you know, sometimes it's easy to forget. It's a big sport down there. You know, when you get an entry list of 100 plus cars, you know it's a big sport.
It is.
And they're absolutely passionate about it. And they're passionate about their great events. And there are a few great events down there. There's a Silver Fern Rally. There's obviously Rally New Zealand. But, you know, arguably, Otago Rally is the absolute biggest rally in New Zealand. And it's always incredibly, incredibly well supported.
I think I've got to say, I couldn't land into Christchurch, because I'm actually, I would be ashamed
banned?
To go.
Banned?
I am. Oh, not banned,
banned for some reason.
Well, here's a story, a very quick story for you. Do you remember that the program called Challenge Annika? This is going back a few. This is going back a while. So Sandra and I went down there for the first time in 2003, a long time ago. Obviously, we were just children traveling together. and in the centre of Christchurch, they do a lot of punting. It's very like Oxford and Cambridge. So we went to go on the punt in the middle of the city. Christchurch is a city, I think. Yeah, so in the middle of the city. It struck us that a couple of weeks before we left, this city had been on Challenge Annika. Challenge Annika was this thing, and this woman called Annika Rice, where she had to go and find clues. She'd find a clue and then she'd run across the city to the next place, or jump in a helicopter and go to find the next clue. One of the clues was hidden underneath a seat in one of these punts. So we got on this boat, and it suddenly struck us that the guy that was doing the punting was the same guy that had been on Challenge Annika. And we were saying, crikey, we saw you on telly 3 weeks ago. And he was like, oh, yeah. Obviously, they came down and filmed it. And I said, oh, we actually, because we were going on holiday to New Zealand, we'd recorded it. So I said, oh, we've got you on tape at home. And he was like, oh, brilliant. I said, I'll send you the tape. And we became immediately great friends.
And he gave you a discount, obviously.
No, he gave us the ride for free. And we were we'll pay. No, you have that on me. And it was quite expensive. And he'd given us a bit of extra time. And we chatted and blah, blah, blah. And we were like, yeah, brilliant. Gave us the address, sent the video, got home. And I could not. I'd recorded over it with Top Gear or something. And I felt really, really guilty.
Cheapskate.
I know. There was nothing I could do. So yeah, I won't be going in Christchurch. But
listen, if that punt man is listening just now.
Yeah, apologies.
Get in touch with me. I'll give you David Evans' address. And you can send him a bill.
Yeah, please do. Please do. No, next year, definitely. We will be down for Otago next year. And I will go and see that man in Christchurch. Back to the rally. You look, we're quite focused, you know, inevitably I am quite focused on the classic rally, because you look at the, like you say, the number of Mark II escorts and the quality of entry. But if you go to the actual first round of the New Zealand Championship, the modern event, it's quite an odd thing, isn't it, in Otago, that the classic came first and the modern followed. We don't very often see that, but I think there's something like, is a 19 AP4 or Rally 2 cars doing it. That's huge. Absolutely. Call, isn't it?
It's a big number. It's a big number, David. And it's, you know, as you say, they've got the formula right there. They really do. Yeah. They're not too prescriptive. And it, you know, when I was down there, it was really, really interesting, because, you know, there are some great cars. There was a guy, I forget his name, Schlenker, I think. I can't remember his name. Apologies, Marcus, apologies. But he had an RX-7. And, you know, this RX-7 had a Subaru wing on the rear of it. And it was, you know, what it encouraged. It encouraged people to get back to the rallying roots and just get the cars in the garage and just make the best car that they can afford and go out and have some fun. And, you know, there was nothing too prescriptive. So you weren't excluding anyone. You weren't saying to anyone, no, you can't come and join this rally because your car doesn't conform with X, Y, and Z regulations. It was like, yeah, fine. Come on, we'll find a category for you to fit in with. Now, what was interesting was, at the award ceremony on the Sunday evening, which was just one of the funniest nights I've ever been to. It was just a huge amount of fun, mostly stoked by Mads Osberg's exploits, I'd have to say. He was great value for money. But there was a guy from the FIA there, and the poor guy, I like this guy a lot, but he got up and he just got the tone of it completely wrong. And, you know, it was part of the, that year Otago was part of the Asia Pacific Championship, and there were only about four entries or something, five entries. It was woeful. But he got up and he said, look, guys, if you only did another round of the APRC, if one or two of you did another round, then you could qualify for the final, and the finals in India and all the rest. And people are looking at him going, you know, what planet are you on? You know, we're rallying because we're having fun. We're not rallying because we want to enter the APRC. You know, we can't afford to adapt our cars to meet the regulation requirements, to have the right fuel tanks, to have the right homologated bumpers and all the rest. You know, we are doing this because it's fun, you know, and because we're part of a rally community, not because we want to conform to some FIA prescribed discipline and potentially spend more money going up to Bloomin'. I think the next round was Whangarei, which, you know, Whangarei is in the north of the North Island. This was in the middle of the South Island. And then the final, yeah, if you qualify for the final, we can all ship our cars off to India. It just got the atmosphere. It got the completely wrong. And you know, and it to me, it highlighted what they've got right in Otago, which is, you know, that open sort of invitation to encourage people to go rallying. And you saw some great innovations, some great cars, some unbelievably quick cars as well. And they're doing a lot right down there.
It's a celebration, isn't it? It's a weekend of a celebration of rallying. And we've done a lot on Dirtfish. You know, if you have a look right now, you'll see the world's most famous Mark II Escort, which is a car that is just a beautiful car that this weekend will be driven by Fang Adan.
say that again?
Fang Adan. He is one of the biggest drifters in the world. Dan Woolhouse from Whangarei, actually. So he's following
Whangarei.
He's following in the footsteps of Jimmy McRae, Ari Vatanen, and Michelle Mouton, Mads Osberg, Marco Martin. Check out that video. It is one of the best that we've produced. And he got his first taste of the Team Rossendale RS1800 at the Westland Rally Sprint on the 20th of March. And just, if you get a chance, get onto Whangadan's Facebook page and have a look. You know, for a guy who is used to just drifting in circles, he's already got the hang of an RS1800. And it is just one of those events. We up here in Britain, we have the Roger Albert Clark, which is a classic rally that essentially does exactly what the old RAC used to do, goes up and down the country. And it's a biennial event, that one for us. And it really captures everybody's imagination in the same way that Otago does. But it's about more than that, George, isn't it? You know, you go to New Zealand and it is a special place for rallying.
It really is. I mean, it's hard to really convey just how tremendous the roads are, because it's the construction. They're just so well made, and lovely cambers. They're just the right width, not too wide to be horrendously fast, not too narrow. They've got such character. Ah, I mean, it's just difficult to actually describe it. Just I want to go to Dunedin now. I mean, can I get a flight? I'd go from Manchester, but I can't wait the 3 days in the queue to get through.
Oh, guys!
So Manchester Airport for everybody listening has something like 2 day queues to get through the security. It's just quite phenomenal.
Chaos as well, George, at the baggage reclaim. Mine is still there.
Oh, seriously? Really?
I got in from Mexico last night and just gave up. So my bags are being delivered today. But you're quite right. You know, it would be, wouldn't it? Do you know what? And how nice is it, George? I know you're just joking about that, but
no, I would go from Edinburgh. Possible. There's no queues at Edinburgh. It's great.
Possible now to do it. We could almost make it, George. Yeah. If we left now, we could almost make it. You know, for the last two
there's
years,
no almost make
impossible.
It, Colin. We would be there. If we decided to go now, we would be there. But I would lose my job.
But it's
damn, can't afford to do that yet.
There is so much going on in Otago. We've got Hamish Bond, who is a former Olympic gold medalist rower. So explain that to us, Cole. You know, why do they bring these people in?
Well, you know what? It's they're a very progressive rally, and they understand the value of the guys that organise it. The Oakley brothers are okay. They're the current guardians of the rally. And they've picked up on a wonderful legacy from, you know, those in the past who have established the rally and brought it on. But they understand the value of promoting the rally. They understand, and this is the same with New Zealand rally drivers and Australian rally drivers. We've seen it over the years. And David, you and I talked about this actually in our last podcast from Mexico. You know, when you're competing, whether it be rallies or drivers from the Southern Hemisphere, when you're having to establish yourself as a rally, as a driver, you have to do things differently. You know, if you're competing against rallies in Europe, remember you're running, you know, at the wrong time of the night in Europe. You're running in the South Island of New Zealand, which, you know, not so many people know about. So you have to do things differently, and the organisers understand that. And over the years, they've always done an amazing job in promoting the rally, in bringing out, you know, generally big name drivers, and we talk about that with the Rosendale Escort, you know. They pay to bring out big drivers, and the biggest drivers in the world go out there, and that is how, that's one of the ways that they've promoted the rally in the past. And as you say, this year, because of the COVID issues, I think Mikko Hirvonen was actually due to go out. He was due to go out certainly in 2020, and I think he was due to go out in 2021. So he's the next, if you like, big name driver they've got lined up. I know Petter Solberg is another driver that they're desperate to get out there.
Just to jump in, Carl, this is the point. You know, you say they bring them out. They bring them out, but then they have to bring them back out because it's so good they all want a second go, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And fair play to them. You know, they understand the value of promoting rallies. You know, they're not just about, you know, it's not a criticism of other rallies, but a lot of rallies around the world are almost slightly insular in that, you know, they don't care. You know, we put on a great rally and that's all that matters. Well, in some ways, yeah, it is all that matters, but people want to know about your rally. If your rally is going to grow, if it's going to become a bigger event in years to come, you have to promote it. And the guys in the South Island around Dunedin appreciate that. And that's why they've developed this legend of the Rosendale Escort. And it is something a little bit special that you don't often see. But as I say, it's what they have to do because of where they are and all the rest. And It is something a bit special that your other rallies could learn from.
And just a little bit of detail, as we said, it starts on Friday, so runs Friday the 8th of April, Saturday the 9th, and Sunday the 10th, and it's a proper event. It's, you know, day one is 9 stages, 144 kilometres, and the following day is 8 stages, 133 kilometres, and great roads, and culminating in the famous Currie Bush stage.
That's a heck of a stage.
Yeah.
And leading, I mean, the guy that everybody is going to be watching, apart from Fanger Dan and Hamish Bond, is bound to be Hayden Paddon, who has recently announced that he will be coming back to the WRC, competing in WRC 2 in a Hyundai i20. Paddon, you know, he's made New Zealand rallying his own. He's a 5-time New Zealand champion. He's got some competition.
He's a WRC event winner, and fought at the front of Thousand Lakes Rally.
He goes into these events in New Zealand, and he's very, very respectful of the competition that he's got. But at the same time, he does kind of know that he's going to win, doesn't he? And this is his point now.
He's got to avoid punctures and problems like anyone else.
But his point, George,
not a massive problem in New Zealand, right?
Is to go for stage times. You know, he looks to win stages.
Yeah.
And that's his own benchmark. But like you say,
not just winning stages, David. He looks to improve his stage times from previous years. He's always looking at you know, he challenges himself against himself.
Yeah.
And that's how he continually motivates himself. There's no complacency.
He's keeping his career alive, at least internally. And I dearly hope that he can get back to WRC this year in the two car. That's great. But
did you work with him at Subaru, George?
Not as such. Obviously, we did it in Group N, and I was around Hayden for many years when he was with his own car, his Mitsubishi.
Mm. He's an inspiration, isn't he?
He's a very, very interesting guy, and it was very difficult for him. He stayed with me here in Scotland for 2 or 3 nights when he moved to Europe. He came and stopped with us for a couple of days and had a nice time. But you know, it's sometimes difficult to follow the advice and do what he did. And I mean, I don't know what happened with him at Hyundai. I mean, it's worth talking about it. But I know that he was offered drives, and then they evaporated.
Yeah, but they evaporated when Sebastian Loeb arrived. I think that was the problem.
Was that the main issue?
Loeb came. Was it Loeb? Okay. Michel Nandon had done a deal with Loeb. And essentially, Sebastian Loeb came and took Hayden's seat. You know, Hayden was definitely, he was going to be a full-time driver.
The thing is, you know, he's doing the right things now, you know, and that's all in the past. So he's getting himself back into the championship. Yeah. And yes, it is a Rally 2 car, but we've seen it in the past. You know, we've seen it in the past. You get yourself in with a team, you're there, you're around the peripheries of the team, and an opportunity presents itself. And then all of a sudden, bang, you're in the car. You're in the Rally 1 car. And we saw it with Teemu Suninen at the end of last year, didn't we? Where he jumped in for Oit Tänak. You know, you've got to be there. This, again, is part of the problem that drivers from the Southern Hemisphere have always faced. You know, it's getting yourself in front of the right people on a regular basis. And Paddon's going to do that. Yeah. You know, is he too old for it? Is he past it? I don't think so. I don't think so. Because I still think he's improving. And I still think that he has something to offer the World Rally Championship. And you know what? You know, you get him back in that car, you get him back up to speed in the World Rally Championship, in the Rally 2 cars, which we know are ultra-competitive just now in terms of the competition. You know, I still think I'd be tempted if an opportunity suddenly came up, be it at M Sport or more likely at Hyundai or wherever it might be, you know, you would say, well, actually, with the head that he's got, the experience that he's got, the pace that he's shown in the past, Paddon could well be your man ahead of any of the other obvious contenders.
Well, Colin, he's a driver that did drive very well, but and just looking at it externally, and he would maybe hate me for what I'm about to say, but he hadn't reached full maturity.
That's it. Yeah,
you know, he still had more to go. He was still gathering the experience, and we know that experience counts for everything. And with some drivers, it doesn't. You know, some drivers never reach maturity, and we won't go through that list.
Just give us one. But just give us one. Come on, George.
Not on this conversation. That's another podcast. But but Hayden, you know, being so analytical, sometimes you can analyse yourself out of existence.
I'm going to give you one. I'll give you one. It's controversial.
Okay,
Jari Matti Latvala. Never
yes,
got there. Never sussed himself out. He won how
now,
many rounds,
now,
but never got there.
You speak to Jari now, Jari will freely admit to the shortcomings he had and realises now what he could have done differently. Which is very frustrating for someone like me that worked with him, you know, a little bit in 2006, 2007. I always liked him prior to that and always kept very close touch with him. It was very frustrating to see him continuing to make those errors, which he knew how to avoid, but he always got tempted into a fight or an incorrect sort of process or not being quite patient enough at times, which is the biggest thing. But you know, Hayden used to get tied up. I need to test. Actually, Hayden, I don't think you do need to test. I'd actually just take you and put you in a car on a rally, and you would immediately perform. People test themselves out of existence as well. They get confused with car setups. Mm. They don't get confused with it. That's unfair to say that. But a fog descends around you. You're trying to gather all the information up, and you end up with just a fog of information. And actually, just get into the car and drive the damn thing, would you?
So,
which is probably what we're seeing some of these racing drivers down in the Southern Hemisphere managing to do. It's fabulous. But no, I would put money on Hayden producing the goods, given, you know, even a small program, you know, 3 or 4 rallies in a WRC car right now, I would say that the guy would be right back at the front. And certainly, you know, a lot better than some of the crop currently driving WRC cars. That's where I would expect him to end up, you know, right near the front within 3 or 4 rallies.
So here's a question for you then. So bring back Jari Matti Latvala. He was 37 last week, I think. Absolutely not past it. And if he's learned enough, Would you? Could he? Could he come back? Could he cut it again?
Yeah, I suspect he could. But George, I wouldn't have any compunction about that at all.
The big question, George, is, you know, as you mentioned, his decision making, his choices. He made poor choices at critical moments in his career. Is he mature enough now to actually make the right choices? Latvala, I spoke to Latvala 3 years ago, 2 years ago, when he was looking for a seat. I think it was the first year. When was that? First year out of Volkswagen. Mm-hmm. It was more than that, wasn't it? It was years and years ago. First year that he was sitting, not doing anything. And he said, look, to be honest with you, I'm looking forward to these cars that are coming in 2020, 2022. He said, because they'll suit my driving style better. I think it's just a shame that we've not seen him in one. He would have been right there, because remember, you know, there were decisions to be made at M Sport about the driver lineup. If Latvala had still been available, I'm sure he would have been pretty high up on Malcolm Wilson's pick list.
Categorically, of course he would have been.
And the guy, of course he would have been. And the guy that had essentially been at the forefront of Yeri Matti's mind, you know, Sebastian Ogier has now departed full-time rallying. So without
the guy
him,
that got in his head, David, head. That got in his head. And you know, it would be interesting in a few years' time when, you know, when people have moved away from the sport and you know, because Latvala is still very central to the sport and Ogier is still very central to the sport. But in a few years' time, maybe 10 or 15 years' time, when they've moved away, things have settled down a little bit, it would be really interesting to have an in-depth chat with Latvala. Because in some ways, you could argue that perhaps Ogier destroyed Latvala. Oh, I think.
100%.
I think Ogier destroyed Latvala. And Latvala would have achieved a whole lot more had he not allowed Ogier. And I don't blame Ogier for that.
Ogier did his job.
He did his job. He recognised a weakness. He knew his strengths. He recognised an opponent's weakness. And he used his strengths. And he exploited his opponent's weaknesses to achieve greatness. And that is what the very best do.
So I think we should just say, make a date in your diary for the first week of April 2032. And we will have that podcast for you. The exclusive insight into how Sebastian Ogier ruined Yeri Matti Latvala. But just a whiz back to Otago for the obviously it is, as we said, first round of the Brian Green Property Group New Zealand Rally Championship. Hayden Paddon is the first car away. But then we've got the likes of Robbie Stokes in an AP4, a Fiesta AP4, Ben Hunt, and obviously Emma Gilmore. A great talent that we saw, Emma, at the Women in Motorsport Summit in Seattle. Emma Gilmore, I mean, somebody who is really making a name for herself now, part of the McLaren Extreme E team, and just actually a hugely competent driver, isn't she?
Yeah, it's astonishing. Remind me what she's driving, David, in Otago.
It's a Suzuki Swift, an AP4 car.
Now, I know exactly why she's driving that car, but that just has deflated me. No. Deflated me totally.
They use a stock engine, though, don't they?
No, mate, honestly, that car, it's just so disappointing. Emma's got enormous talent. And, you know, no, honestly, you know what? It is a wonderful story. You know, Emma Gilmore, we remember her from, was it the Junior World Rally Championship she was in all those years ago? You know, she was reasonably regular in the World Rally Championship. Rhiannon Gelsomino next to her.
Yeah, that's right.
And then she went back home and she took over the family business, which is a Suzuki dealership, which is why she's driving a Suzuki. And you know, she was still doing rallies in New Zealand. I don't remember, since I've been following New Zealand rallying, I don't remember her finishing a rally in that Suzuki. They found it so difficult to build reliability into that car. She's had a couple of really good stages and then something breaks. And that's been the story, certainly, of the last 4 or 5 years. They're developing that car themselves, and it's just not worked, and it's a real shame. But the story is remarkable. You know, she'd more or less given up on doing much more than just the odd round of the New Zealand Championship. This opportunity came along in Extreme E, and my goodness me, talk about grasping the opportunity and making the most of it. Emma's done that, and it's a great story. It's great to see. I know why she's doing it. They do own a Suzuki dealership, and clearly there is brand loyalty there. But I would dearly love to see her in a car that was perhaps established as a reliable car, knowing that, you know, as long as she doesn't break that car, as long as she doesn't do anything silly, that car should get her to the end of the rally. then we would see.
She would be a top three or four driver, George, if she was in the same machinery.
She's
very, very talented, very, very good technical driver.
Yeah.
As far as that last edge goes, I'm not taking anything away from her saying that she's never lived at that bleeding edge of the sport, but she's very, very close to it. Incredibly good driver.
I think I just dived into our friends at EWRC, and she did finish a couple of events at the back end of 2020, third on the Bay of Plenty. But you're dead right, Cole. You know, steering issues on Otago last year, transmission issues in Whangarei. She's struggled. One of the interesting things about Otago for me and for New Zealand rallying is that for a lot of years, they really struggled to get Rally 2, what were then R5 cars, down there. The geography of the place means that it is difficult. It's very expensive to ship out spare parts. But Todd Borden is starting Otago this weekend in a brand new Fiesta R5, or Rally 2, sorry, a Mark 2 car. Yeah. Fantastic that those cars are getting down there now.
Yeah, the other thing, David, is that a bit like, if you like, Ireland, you know, there was a bit of pushback against the left-hand drive cars.
Yeah.
You know? Vast majority of drivers down there are driving right-hand drive cars. And, you know, when they were looking at importing cars, I know a couple of guys were looking at the Proton, because the Proton was obviously homologated as a right-hand drive car. And there were some serious inquiries about getting a few Protons down there. But to have a brand new Rally 2 car out there, it's going to be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that competes against the AP4s. You know, we saw in the Australian Championship at the weekend, we saw Harry Bates again in the AP4 car against some very, very good Rally 2 cars. He absolutely wiped the floor with them. It'll be interesting to see how that Rally 2 car stacks up in New Zealand.
And if you do want to have a good in-depth look at the comparison between an AP4 car and a Rally 2 car, our friend Hayden Padden has made a fabulous video explaining the differences for us. So go to dirtfish.com, go to our YouTube channel, and it is all explained there brilliantly by Hayden. That's another great thing about Hayden is, you know, his ability to explain stuff to Luddites like you and I, Cole, certainly not you, George.
No, not to me, David. Not you. To me, the Luddites like me. I'm happy to put my hand up and say I'm the only Luddite in the room here.
Nonsense. Absolutely.
No. Here, listen, the other thing we have to talk about.
Well, is Luddite, is that a step up from a troglodyte? A troglodyte's a cave dweller. So what's a Luddite? Is a Luddite not some sort of religious group that wasn't accepting the world's flat, etc.?
I can't. For me, a Luddite is somebody technically incompetent, so apologies if I've... Yeah, that's
you haven't offended me. You haven't offended me at
all.
No,
nor myself, Cole.
And a troglodyte's a cave dweller. Right.
There we go. We're learning. Yeah, listen, guys, the other thing...
Beautiful artists. They've got lots going for them.
The other thing we have to talk about, guys, with Otago, and we've mentioned this a few times on the podcast, is the entry list. The entry list. And the number of... Yeah. Women on the entry list. Now, I guessed it was around 40%, but someone, thank goodness, actually added it all up. And it is 40% of the entry list are women.
It's brilliant.
It's astonishing. It is absolutely... Talk about equal opportunities. You know, there's no talk about that in New Zealand because it exists. It exists. Rallying's for everyone. You know, I've talked about them before. My friends, the Hudson family, Rocky Hudson and his lovely wife and his young daughter and young even younger son, a family of co-drivers. His young son had done something like, and I kid you not, when I met him, just he was just short of his 16th birthday. And I think he'd done something like 23 rallies. And he wasn't even 16. You know, his daughter was I think about 18, 19. And she was a veteran, you know, because they'd been going to rallies with her mum and dad all their lives, all of their lives. They're a massive Subaru family. They're a massive family of co-drivers, a massive rally family. And that's what they've got in New Zealand. They've promoted that, not women in motorsport as such. They've promoted families in motorsport.
Yeah.
And it is an astonishing success story. And it amazes me that it doesn't get more attention. You know, we have, some wonderful initiatives by the FIA. And we had, obviously, Women's Month at Dirtfish. But there is a part of the world, certainly for rallying, okay, if we drill down and say women in rallying, there is a part of the world, there is a rally which is getting it right. And if there's someone that's getting it right, then you get down there, you find out what they're doing, you create a blueprint for it, and you copy it.
Mm.
You know, for me, it's dead simple.
You're right, they are.
It's partly a culture thing as well.
But yeah, but George, but Colin, that's about promoting a culture then. You know, if it's a cultural thing, that's great, because cultures can always be influenced and promoted. Mm. You know, if that's all it is, then great. You know, you can replicate that. You can replicate that atmosphere, that feeling, that desire to make it into a family sport. And as I say, it is not about promoting women in motorsport. It is about promoting families in motorsport. And maybe, just maybe, that is the key to it. I don't know.
But it is always the way, isn't it, with New Zealand? It's the same. You know, if you go to a rugby match on a Saturday, it's a family day out.
Absolutely.
And it's fabulous. But just, we've talked a lot about this Team Rossendale Mark II Escort, but obviously there are some other entries on the Otago International Classic Rally and some great cars. You know, Paul Kendrick in a 131 R Bath, a whole bunch of Toyota Starlets out there. Obviously, the Mark II Escort is a very popular car of choice. But all the way through, Nissan Bluebird Turbo, that Mazda RX-7 call that you were talking about, a female co-driver, Donna Elder, in there.
Yeah, with a lovely lad.
John Silcock. You know, great, great cars. And there's a Group B Toyota Celica there just for you. George, with Dan Boos driving it from Christchurch. It is...
It's wrong that I'm not there. That's all I can say. It's just wrong.
Next year.
We should all reconvene there next year. I really do.
I think there's a definite danger if we all get down there next year, we may never come back.
Yeah. Some people would like that, David.
Yes. Absolutely, Colin.
Some people will. Maybe they'll start a GoFundMe page to send us
to send us there. Please do. Feel free. Otago is the place to be, especially this weekend coming up. Well, I reckon, Lise, I think we're probably... Lisa's been very quiet. She's just sat back and listened. She can fill in
there. And I do apologise to everyone for disappearing part of the way through.
Was it an important call? It
was an important call, yes, an offshore call. So we've got various issues. Just for anyone that doesn't know, I look after lots of safety equipment offshore. So
that is very important.
On call all the time.
Can I tell you? I watched some great movies on the flight home from Mexico. By the way,
did you?
Yeah,
we're not asleep, Colin.
No. Well,
tell us about the movie.
I tried to pace it so that I kind of started the jet lag early. I thought if I fall asleep now, then that's not a great idea. So watch a couple of movies and then fall asleep. But the problem was, so I watched a couple of movies, decent movies, fell asleep, woke up a bit early, thought I'll put on another movie, but didn't have enough time to finish it. That's just schoolboy error. But George, it was about the. What was the oil rig that blew up in the Gulf of Mexico?
Oh, my goodness.
A terribly tragic story.
Deep Water Horizon
with Mark Wahlberg.
Unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness, mate.
What a film.
What a movie. What a movie. And do you know, it's so good. It is so good. I am seriously considering spending £2.99 to get it on Amazon Prime to watch the end of it.
I thought you were going to say it's so good you're considering a change of career and you're going to have George looking after safety in the North Sea.
No, I couldn't do it because I really couldn't do it. I saw them coming in and they've got these wonderful shots, the helicopter coming in and landing on the helipad. And then they get out of the helicopter and you're on that pad a million feet up in the air. And I'm thinking, I couldn't get out of the helicopter. That would be the end of my career.
Have you been out to an oil rig, George?
On quite a few occasions,
Is it scary? Oh,
yes. Yes and no.
That's a yes for you and I, Colin.
Definitely.
Yes and no. I mean, the helicopters. I remember one flight out to I can't remember which oil rig I was going out to. I think I was going out to the Armada oil rig, which is quite a small one. Yeah, it was that one. And we stopped on the way. We had a flyby on a jackup. So the three legged jackup rigs that you see floating, and then they put their legs down. Those are drilling rigs, not production rigs. So they move around. They just do drilling. We landed on one of those, and there's about 10 cranes on this jackup. And of course you've got the big legs sticking up, and there's wires and cables. And I mean, I never take a window seat because just because the experienced people really kind of bully themselves to their way to the front so they can get a window seat so they can rest their head against the window because everybody falls asleep on the flight.
It's a long flight.
But yours truly, of course, it's about an hour and 10 minutes generally. Wow. It can be as much as an hour and 40 minutes, but it's about 110, 115 nautical miles east of Aberdeen, and you can sort of go northeast and southeast. Mm. So that there's about a 100-mile tranche there where you can, because you kind of go out on radials, and it's 100, maybe about 120 miles. But we landed on this this jack-up rig, and all we seem to do, I'm sitting in the middle seat, and I've got a view out the front window a little bit, but quite a narrow perspective because I'm sitting about 4 meters, maybe 3 meters behind the door into the cockpit, which is open. So I've got a view of some of the instruments, which I quite like, and I'm watching the pilots, and I've got a peripheral view out the side windows, but again, a very narrow perspective. And all I can see is cables, and we seem to be going underneath ladders, and we're not, but just think of yourself, geez, I really, really, really don't like this. This is horrible, landing on this. We seem to fly through cables and stanchions and posts and all sorts of things. That was the appearance of it to me. And then we landed on our oil rig, which is okay. But when you land on the oil rig, it's very, very strict what you do. You know, you're wearing heads, you've got double ear protection in. So you've got little earplugs you put in and then headphones over the top. The headphones are not vocal ones, they're sound deadeners. You've got your immersion suit on. You've got training shoes over the immersion shoes. You've got
immersion shoes. Sorry,
light immersion suit.
Immersion suit. Okay, so that is basically
suit. That's a dry suit. A dry
if you
suit.
Fall in, you're not going to sink.
No. It doesn't stop you sinking. It stops you getting wet, so therefore getting cold. And you've got in winter, you've got to have 3 layers of clothes. In summer, you can drop that down to 2 underneath the immersion suit. It's all very strictly controlled. And then you've got your life jacket on and your breathing equipment on as well, which you've all been trained to use. And you get off the helicopter at the other end, and so you're out on the deck, and it's windy. You know, it's usually quite windy, but very rarely calm. And you know, you immediately get battered by the wind. Mm. Smell of jet fuel because the helicopter blades are still turning.
You're not really selling it to us.
The core crew have unloaded the bags. No, wait for it. The core crew have unloaded the bags at the back of the helicopter. You've got to pick up your bags. So you can have as many as 2, but you've got to have one hand free. So you can have one bag over your shoulder, one bag in your hand, because when you're walking down any stairs, and there's stairs everywhere, you can imagine, you must hold the banister. You've got to hold the handrail. And I have, the very first flight I went out, I saw a guy who, I'm not quite sure what he was, but he would have been needed out there for whatever. But he got off the flight, we walked down through the steps. I'd struggled because the bag I had, the shoulder strap had broken earlier in the day. So I had 2 bags to try and carry and had to hold the handrail. And I was very conscious of the fact that I'd just finished the training and it was very, very strict. And the specific training for that particular flight was site-specific, and they were very clear about what you did. We walked down the steps into the wee room, and before we even got our kit off, we were all held in a little area outside this wee room, and there was about 20 of us. And the OIM said, so I'm the OIM, my name's such and such. I'm going to give you the briefing this afternoon in a few minutes. We'll let you get all your gear off and store your bags there just now. That'll be in 5 minutes, but in the meantime, and he walked past me to a guy just literally stopped beside me. He'd been in front of me as he'd been walking down the stairs. He said, "You, what's your name?" And the guy says his name. He said, "Right, you just keep all your kit on. You're going back to shore straight away." "Oh, what's the problem? What's the problem?" He said, "Never mind." He said, "You're going back to shore." That was it. No explanation, nothing. We went into the briefing. 10 minutes later, he comes in, introduces himself again. Da, 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 da. We get all the story from him. He said, "Okay, that one of your colleagues that came out there," said, "I don't care who he was at all, but he disobeyed the very first safety instruction, the very first rule we have, which was he walked down the stairs holding both his hands. He didn't bother to hold the hand banisters and didn't make any effort to do so. Said, if that guy can't follow that basic safety rule, he's putting us all at risk. What else is he prepared to ignore?" Sent him straight back to shore.
Wow. It sounds a lot like the Clark household. That's how you bring the children up, isn't it, Cole?
100%.
Yeah, it is. Very, very strict. It's very strict.
Well, I think that was a fantastic way to end this this podcast all about the Otago International Classic.
Apologies.
George, I would listen to your stories every minute of every
Lisa,
day.
Lisa will cut this out.
She won't. Lisa will not cut this out, I'm sure.
I'm staying in.
Absolutely. So, boys.
Okay.
And Lisa, obviously... looking forward to a great weekend rallying down under. Obviously, tune into dirtfish.com for all of the news. Cole, yep. you're gonna do a bit of a night shift, and
I am
put together some videos for us.
And it's great because obviously there isn't any live TV coverage of the rally itself, but our friends down in Otago, keep an eye on their Facebook page as well, the Otago Rally Facebook page. There will be updates from every single stage. So there'll be video updates, there'll be written updates from every single stage of the Otago Rally on their Facebook page. So,
yeah, big.
So right, and I follow Chris Grant's page. Is it Chris Sport?
Yeah.
He's got great results service on that as well. That's good. And the odd story that fires out from there too.
But brilliant. A big shout out to Paul Mullen as well, who is the videographer and editor down there, who's going to be
excellent.
Helping us. A great guy. Yeah. And otagorally.com as well. Have a look at that.
Oh, by the way.
Yes, go.
Can I tell you about the book I finished reading? Eventually. Oh, can I or not?
Of course. I'm sure.
Yeah, quickly.
Ross Dunkerton, multiple Australian rally champion. He's been down and competed at Otago as well. Finished reading his autobiography. Oh, my goodness me. Can't recommend it highly enough. I think we're going to try and serialise some of it
exactly.
on dirtfish.com.
Yeah,
no, it might have to be just slightly adapted for a family audience, some of it. But honestly, one of the best rally books I have ever read. Just a great, just a rollicking ride through the greatest, I think, probably the greatest period.
For anyone that doesn't know Ross Dunkerton or who he is, apart from the fact that he was a multiple champion in Australia, Ross Dunkerton looks like Crocodile Dundee before Crocodile Dundee looked like Crocodile Dundee.
Crocodile Dundee was even thought about, and Dunko is the original Crocodile Dundee. But George, every page I turned, I thought I'm going to get a mention of George Donaldson here because it slightly mirrors at times your career with Asia Pacific and Toyota and all of these things. But it was just the best read. So many stories. And just a different sort of generation with different skills, different crafts, different motivations for doing rallying. But ultimately, just about having a huge amount of fun along the way. It was great. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. So
keep an eye on dirtfish.com because we will, Colin, you are our chief Ross Dunkerton Dunko correspondent. Get in touch with him. Or you are in touch with him. We will get that book, the family-friendly bits of it, on dirtfish.com. Chaps, I think it's time to go. I'm already 7 minutes late for another call.
David, run.
So, yes, indeed. So we will catch up after the Otago International Classic Rally and the first round of the Brian Green Property Group New Zealand Rally Championship. So good luck to everybody over there and thanks very much.
See ya.
Excellent. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Great.
Bye-bye.
We'll speak soon.